You're listening to the Odyssey Las Vegas Public Affairs Show. I'm Heather Vail, and I'm speaking with Brooke Neubauer, founder and CEO of the Just One Project. Brooke, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you so much for having me. I love being on your show.
So for those who aren't familiar with the organization, what is the Just One Project?
The Just One Project is a nonprofit serving Southern Nevada, and we focus on creating access to not only groceries, but to wraparound services and supportive services so that people can get back on their feet or they can find self-sustainability and just, again, you know, that touch point to groceries when they are feeling food insecure and when food is just a struggle for them.
Why did you start the Just One Project in the first place?
You know, I volunteered and did my first charitable thing in my 30s, and it literally changed every aspect of my life. And I just thought, how many friends that I connected with on a daily basis, you know, that were not involved yet in some type of community effort. And I just simply started inviting my friends to join me with these volunteering events. And it became kind of a movement on its own to where people just wanted to start getting involved and giving back together.
So how long has the Just One Project been serving the Las Vegas community now?
So we are approaching our 10-year anniversary. We started in July of 2014 is when I applied for our 501c3, and we became an official nonprofit in November of 2014. So actually July is 10 years.
Wow, that's awesome. So happy anniversary.
Yes, thank you so much. Isn't that funny? I totally did not even remember that.
That's awesome. So what are some of the programs and services that you offer to community members through the Just One Project?
So, you know, we started out, like I said, as a volunteer organization with no age requirement. And that is really how we kind of found our start into being a nonprofit. And we slowly became introduced into the food insecurity landscape here in Southern Nevada. And that inspired us to create our first real program, which was our Pop Up and Give. And that is under our Food for All program. And so that is where we serve people through our Pop Up and Give, which is our mobile distribution. It's also our no-cost community markets. We have a few locations across town. Some are in schools, which are great. And they come with wraparound services, which is really important. And then we have 16 case managers that help people with everything from some clients are chronically homeless, some clients have unstable housing, and some clients just need some support with their utilities. That is called our Community Connect. And then we have our youth program that is our self-development arm, and that's for disconnected youth that are 16 to age 20. That are not connected to the workforce and they're not currently in the education system. And so we kind of have something for everybody, whether it be a program that you are in need of or a volunteering opportunity.
Nice. So the organization has obviously evolved over time based on the needs of the community. Why are these specific programs needed here in Nevada?
You know, we always tell people that food insecurity really doesn't fit in one certain box. It doesn't look like, you know, one certain look. And I think it's just important for people to know that there are so many reasons why somebody could be food insecure. And if somebody is facing food insecurity, the likelihood of them needing other supportive services is pretty strong. But, you know, whether it's an illness, a loss of income, a lot of our clients are just making it by. Maybe they make a dollar more an hour and they're unable to get resources, you know, like SNAP benefits. So it really is just a really important safety net for the community.
Yeah, definitely. So how many people do you think you help through your programs on, let's say, an average month?
An average month, we are seeing about 20,000 clients served, and that's over our mobile distribution, our home delivery, that is people coming into our headquarters community market at our school locations. So thanks to our volunteers, we activate over 600 volunteers every single month. And it is through that support that we're able to actively serve that many people every single month.
So you've mentioned the importance of your volunteers a few times. What sorts of opportunities are there for volunteers to get involved and help out?
Well, Monday through Friday, people come in and they distribute groceries at our headquarters location, which is conveniently located on Vegas and Decatur. We also have a Saturday volunteer opportunity, which is great for kids that have school. Again, you know, that age requirement doesn't exist with us. So really, we try to focus on removing barriers even to volunteerism.
Yeah, that's great. So I noticed that you've got a Big Cup golf tournament coming up in October. What's that all about?
Yeah, so many of our golfers say that our golf tournament is their favorite and the best in Southern Nevada. And I think it's because just like the programs that we create that are designed for our clients that we're serving, we think about our golfers and we think about what do they want to experience on the golf course? What is it that creates an incredible golf tournament? And so we have a lot of activations on the course, which is amazing. It's just such a good vibe. It's really unique. And this is our fourth annual and we're just absolutely thrilled about it.
When's it going to happen?
Our golf tournament this year is on October 17th, and we are super thrilled. The weather is going to be absolutely gorgeous, and we just love the fact that our repeat golfers come back out, and it grows over year. We have new golfers all the time, so it's just such a wonderful way to enjoy your favorite sport while also giving back to the community.
Yeah, that's fantastic. So for people who aren't golfers, what other opportunities do you have to donate or help out financially?
So, you know what? We always encourage people to look us up online, to get to know our programs, follow us on social media. Literally following us on social media, you see us in action every single day. You know, when you come and volunteer, you can see how active we are. And, you know, online donations are always absolutely amazing. We love community partnerships. Those people are really dedicated to helping us move the needle. So we're always looking to help companies give back, get involved. And of course, you know, those gift donations from companies, it's just really important for us to have these public and private partnerships, because at the end of the day, who doesn't want to pay it forward and really help move the needle with the community needs?
Yeah, absolutely. And what does it mean to be a charitable gangster?
A charitable gangster is so simple. It just means that you give and you support the Just One Project, whether you're giving the gift of your time or your treasures.
Nice. Okay. So where can listeners go if they want to find out more information, first of all, about the Just One Project, what you're doing in the community, or get involved by volunteering or donating?
They can follow us on social media, which is so easy. They can follow us online. I think everybody getting social with us would be a great, fantastic, feel-good thing, because then on newsfeed, there's going to be a lot of wonderful faces, wonderful smiles, and just invitations to get involved and give back.
And the website?
TheJustOneProject.org.
Okay, awesome. So once again, TheJustOneProject.org is the place to go if you want to find out more information about the Just One Project. There are links to all the social media sites down at the bottom as well under Get Social With Us. So you can find them on Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, X, and YouTube. And you can find out more also about the upcoming Big Cup golf tournament. That's happening on Thursday, October 17th at the Revere Golf Club. All the information is also there on the website, thejustoneproject.org. And of course, we've been speaking today with Brooke Neubauer. She's the founder and CEO of the Just One Project. And Brooke, I love talking to you about all the different projects and programs that you have going on, because it seems like you're always innovating and coming up with new ways to serve the community and also giving people that opportunity to volunteer. As you said, no age limit, no minimum age, no maximum age. All ages can volunteer and help out, and of course, donating as well. So I really appreciate you being here and letting us know more about what you're doing with the Just One Project. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. We appreciate to connect with your listeners.
Don't you wish your life came with a warning app?
That dog does not want to be petted.
Well, life doesn't always give you time to change the outcome, but prediabetes does. Take the one-minute test today at doihaveprediabetes.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and its Prediabetes Awareness Partners.
I'm Heather Vail, and this is the Odyssey Las Vegas Public Affairs Show. Joining me is Janae Klein, Recruitment and Retention Lead for Eagle Quest, and Sherelle Elwell, Recruitment and Retention Specialist. Thank you both for being here today.
Thanks for having us.
Yes, thank you.
So what exactly is Eagle Quest?
So Eagle Quest is a specialized foster care agency. We are actually the largest specialized foster care agency within the state of Nevada. And so we specifically work with higher level of care youth, which means that our kids that we foster in our many homes around the Las Vegas Valley will have a mental health diagnosis, which can coincide with some behaviors. And these kids need a lot of support, care, structure, and just support within their lives. All of the kids that we work with have experienced trauma. This could look like physical abuse, sexual abuse, neglect, or verbal abuse, or maybe exposure to domestic violence. And so they temporarily have to be removed out of the home. And so we specifically specialized in working for those kids and being a huge support in their lives. And we actually also have a lot of community partners that work with us as well, such as the Department of Family Services, Department of Juvenile Justice, as well as a program called The Harbor, which is also located around various areas around Las Vegas, which is a juvenile assessment center to kind of help kids stay out of the juvenile justice system and give them supports and resources as soon as possible.
So do these kids typically need a higher level of care because of the trauma they've gone through that put them in the foster care system, or are they kids that would need that extra attention regardless?
So it's hard to say. Sometimes it might just be, you know, they may not have gone through as much trauma, but they do need that extra help just because of mental health and everything like that. But when you add in that trauma piece, it only intensifies it.
Is it harder to find foster parents for these kids who require a higher level of care than it is to find foster parents in general?
Absolutely. It's hard to find foster parents in general, I would say, because, you know, we want to make sure that they're in it for the right reasons. We want to make sure that they're going to keep our kids safe in a well-nurturing environment. But when you add in that extra layer of the higher level of care and the behavioral needs that our kids have, it definitely makes things more difficult.
Yeah. So what's involved in becoming a foster parent?
So the first step pretty much is reaching out to our agency. And so it actually takes people up to 3 years to actually take that first step to make the start of that transition in their life of opening up their home. And so pretty much once they decide to take that first step, they reach out to us. We conduct something called pre-screening questions, where we just make sure that they meet all of the qualifications. This can look like stable income, a clear conviction history, a vehicle. And then after that, we have them attend an information session. And they have the ability to attend via Zoom or in person down here at our office on Rancho and Gowan. And that's when we would give them additional information in regard to us as an agency, the kids that we do work with, the documents we would need, and the steps for them to become licensed, as well as the required training. Because one thing we never want to do is just kind of have someone jump in, not knowing what to expect, and not knowing a lot about how trauma impacts kids and just impacts people in general. And then from there, they'll attend the training, and then we collect licensing documents, do some pop-up home visits, talk to references, and pretty much just build that relationship between the agency and the prospective foster parent. So that way they know they're supported in the process of submitting their application to Department of Family Services and getting approved, and then starting to take in kids and things such as that. But time frame-wise, it's really in their hands of how soon they can turn in documents and things such as that.
And are your needs at Eagle Quest specifically for experienced foster parents, or could someone start off with kids who require extra care, even if they haven't been a foster parent before?
So we've definitely had multiple foster parents come to us that have had no type of experience, and we've trained them up and they're thriving. But if there are anyone out there that do have any of that experience, it would always be very welcomed. I think the more experience, the better, but they don't have to have that experience.
Right. So, how many foster parents do you currently need in the Las Vegas area?
Honestly, as many as possible, only because there continues to be so many kids placed at Child Haven who are in need of homes. And so, really, as many as we can get, honestly, because we don't want any kids to have to spend any days at Child Haven, especially when we talk about kids spending Christmas, Thanksgiving, and other holidays at Child Haven. We want them to be able to be in a home surrounded by parents and just people who want to be there to support them and love on them. And so, honestly, as many people as we can get would be greatly appreciated so we can continue to keep these kids first and be able to support them.
Why is there a shortage of foster parents in general, let alone for kids who require extra care?
I think the biggest factor that comes into it here locally is how transient our community is. So you have people that just kind of move here, stay a little while, leave. And with that can come a couple of things. That can come with maybe somebody moved here with their kids, but they couldn't care for the kids. The kids ended up in care. And then the parents are kind of moving around. But then you also have so that like our community as a whole, if everyone's kind of transient, they don't have like those roots that keep them here. Like, I've seen that be a big factor on why it's difficult to find foster parents here. Other than that, I would say just the intensity and people that are willing to open up their homes and take in these kids that, they don't know. I know personally, like, my home is like my safe place, and to open it up to strangers ultimately is kind of uncomfortable, and people don't like to feel uncomfortable. So really just needing people that are willing to take that leap of faith, who are in it for the right reasons and have it in their hearts, because we don't want people in it for the wrong reasons.
And I would also say people tend to doubt themselves as well, to where a lot of people are interested in fostering, but they may think like, oh, well, I rent a home, I don't own a home, or I've never had kids of my own. And so there's so many people that think about fostering for so many years. Like how I said earlier, a lot of people think about fostering up to 3 years until they decide to kind of take that first step to get started on the process. So I think also people kind of disqualifying themselves or thinking that they won't have the ability to do it can kind of play into the reason why we may not have as many foster parents. But the biggest thing that we always want to do is encourage people and let them know, like Sherelle said, like you don't have to have kids of your own in order to be a successful foster parent. You haven't had to be in foster care yourself in order to be a successful foster parent. And so our job here is to train you, build you up, and be able to show you the strengths that you have to be able to help our kids.
Yeah, and in addition to all of those reasons that you've both just mentioned, I can see how it feels like a big responsibility to be responsible for these kids. So, how does someone know if they would be a good foster parent?
I think they just have to have that yearning, the want to do it from their hearts. And then other things that make a good foster parent are flexibility. Our kids are going to get suspended, they're going to get sick. I always say, like, you have to be willing to treat these kids as your own. So, like, if my kid got sick at school, I would run and pick them up. No questions asked. That's what would happen. So, definitely that flexibility, a willingness to learn, and being open to some constructive criticism so that we are able to teach you, so that we can best support you, so that you can best support the kids.
So, besides feeling good about making a vital difference in the lives of kids who desperately need it, what are the benefits of being a foster parent?
So I definitely think that, a lot of people will think about the big moments. So like maybe that kid who struggled, or he was 18 credits short from graduating and brought his credits up to be able to graduate on time still. Those big moments are, I think, what a lot of people think of when they think about like, why do you do it? But I also want to point out like the small things. So even like we had a kid who struggled and struggled and struggled in a couple different homes. And then once he got into the right home and the right fit for him, he's been in the home now for like 3 years and he's about to get adopted. So maybe not like those big, huge moments like a graduation, but even those little things. Or finding that right person on their team that's able to make that breakthrough with a kid to help them thrive. Another big thing is like, even when a kid transitions out for whatever reason, so maybe they age out, maybe they are reunified, or they get adopted, a lot of our foster parents are still involved and still maintain that communication with the kids. So I have one foster parent who has been in the delivery room of, I want to say, three of her old foster girls' labor and delivery rooms when they had their babies, because they didn't have that mother figure in their life. But she, even though she was no longer their foster mom, she was still that support for them.
Now, it can obviously be expensive and challenging in many ways to raise kids. So what sorts of resources and help do foster parents have access to?
So in regard to the resources, there's various places around Las Vegas, such as Project 150, Peggy's Closet, to where they're able to give a lot of clothing to the kids. Us as an agency here, we also ensure that the kids are given those resources. And so once someone is a foster parent with our agency, they're assigned a case manager, and there's additional EagleQuest team members to make sure that they do have access to those resources. And so in regard to like the financial aspect, in regard to starting the process of licensing, we're aware that prospective foster parents will have to spend money, for example, getting their fingerprints done at Child Haven, purchasing bunk beds, things like that. And so we do have something put in place to be able to kind of help that within the reimbursement. And we do give them more detailed information about that if they do attend an information session. But there's various resources around Las Vegas to help with schooling, clothing, various things. What we like to do is have our foster parents be able to focus solely on the kids and come along the parents and the child to be able to make sure that the kids do receive those resources.
Nice. At EagleQuest, what are the ages of the kids who typically need a foster home?
So typically our ages are going to be between the ages of 8 and 18, with the average being about 12. That's not to say that we don't get younger kids. We do have a handful of them, but we're not typically seeing those mental health diagnoses occur until they're around the age of around 8.
Okay. Now, if someone is thinking of being a foster parent and they've kind of been intrigued by what you're saying, but they're still not sure because, you know, as we talked about, there's a lot of reasons to have doubts and wonder if you would be a good foster parent. But if they're willing to explore, what would be the next step so that they could find out more about what's involved and whether they would be a good candidate?
So the next step would be contacting us. And so like the pre-screening questions that we talked about earlier, we aren't just going through the questions like yes or no. We're actually also giving them additional information and answering any questions that they may have. We like our pre-screening questions as well as our information sessions to be very personable, to where we want to know what doubts are they having, what are they thinking that would cause them to be hesitant in regard to fostering, and being able to kind of talk to them about it, talk it through with them, being fully transparent with them in regard to how our kids are, and talk to them about what do you think your strengths are, what do you think your needs are. And so my biggest thing is that if you're thinking about it, but you're not sure, the biggest thing is just reaching out, because there's always information that we're able to share that some people may not know. And so I would encourage them to still reach out, ask questions, never be scared to ask us questions, because if it means we have to talk to you for 2 hours, 3 hours on the phone, we're willing to do it just to be able to make sure that all your questions are answered and you could feel a little bit more comfortable in the decision that you'd want to make.
So what's the website where people can go if they'd like to get more information and then start the process if they decide that they would like to explore it?
For sure. So our website is going to be eagleQuestServices.org. And so if they go straight to eagleQuestServices.org, there is a whole page that is dedicated to those who are interested in becoming a foster parent. It goes into some fun facts about foster parents, as well as additional information as some of the requirements. So I would say anyone that's interested, they could start there, kind of get some information starting there. And if they still have additional questions or they want to take that next step, they can always call us, and our number is right in that front page of the website.
Okay, awesome. So once again, eaglequestservices.org is the website to go to, eaglequestservices.org. You can find out more about what EagleQuest does. And if you're interested in becoming a foster parent, the phone number is right up there at the top. You can also email. The address is there if you'd like to go by and visit. But there's plenty of information there about the various foster parent requirements that they're looking for. And keep in mind, EagleQuest is a specialized foster care agency specifically dealing with kids who have a higher level of care, sometimes behavioral issues. They've been through some trauma. So that's one thing to keep in mind. Now, you don't have to have experience in order to be that foster parent, but they can also refer you to the Department of Family Services if you decide you want to get involved in being a foster parent and you're not ready yet for the higher level of care. But either way, it all starts at eaglequestservices.org. And we've been speaking today with Janae Klein. She's the recruitment and retention lead for EagleQuest, and also Sherelle Elwell, who's the recruitment and retention specialist. And you guys have provided a lot of great information that I'm sure a lot of people can now think about. And maybe they didn't realize that it is something that they would like to do. They would like to help a kid and have that great feeling. Doing it for the right reasons from the heart, it can just make such an amazing difference in these kids' lives. So I really appreciate you both being here today. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. We appreciate the opportunity as well.
After I lost my mom, I lost my way. Then I found youth advocate programs, YAP.
YAP gives communities alternatives to residential care, youth incarceration, and neighborhood violence. Others talk social change. We make it happen. Learn more at yapinc.org.
This is the Odyssey Las Vegas Public Affairs Show, and I'm Heather Vail. Joining me is Ryan Burgos, U.S. Air Force and Army veteran of the Iraq War and Director of National Employment for Disabled American Veterans, or DAV. As we observe National Hire a Veteran Day this month, DAV is urging employers to take notice of veterans and the unique qualities they bring to the workplace. Ryan, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you very much for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
So what exactly is Disabled American Veterans?
So DAV, or Disabled American Veterans, is a nonprofit that provides a lifetime of support for veterans of all generations, their families, and their survivors. Simply put, we like to think of ourselves as a one-stop shop for all veterans' needs, whether they're separating from service or they've been off active duty for a number of years. You know, and as the nation's most resourceful patriotic charity, we focused on keeping the promise to America's veterans for more than 100 years now.
Wow. So how does DAV help veterans connect to employment opportunities?
So our national employment program actually began 10 years ago. We've hosted over 1,000 job fairs all across the country to include virtual events. And we're definitely proud to say that we've played a vital role in securing over 185,000 meaningful employment opportunities for veterans and spouses within the past 10 years.
Nice. So what are some of the unique characteristics that veterans bring to the workplace?
You know, our veterans, our nation's heroes, are mission-driven. They're men and women of integrity, time management skills, those leadership skills that, you know, quite frankly, employers on an annual basis spend thousands of dollars trying to teach these soft skills that veterans possess as soon as they separate from active duty. So one thing we always say is, you know, why not hire a veteran? Why not bring these mission-driven individuals onto our teams so that way we can make our company more successful?
Yeah. Now, what would you tell veterans who aren't really sure of how their military experience can translate to the civilian workplace?
Let DAV help you. You know, visit jobs.dav.org. Myself or a member of our team here can assist you in translating those skills, provide mentorship opportunities, even provide you a job board with more than 240,000 nationwide vacancies. You don't need an account to log in or anything. All you need to know is what you want to do and know your zip code, and DAV can handle the rest for you.
Nice. Okay, so you're helping veterans connect with employers. On the flip side, how do you help employers connect with the veterans that you have available for work?
You know, education is key. You know, you don't know what you don't know. And quite frankly, I think employers out there, they do want to help out. They do want to hire veterans, and sometimes they just don't know. So DAV meets them where they are as well. We provide mentorship to employers. We've got a guide to hiring and retaining veterans with disabilities on our website, jobs.dav.org. We'll meet with them individually. We'll try to get them into our job fairs, whether it's in-person or virtual events, and just educating them. That's more than half the battle right there.
Yeah. So of those 185,000 veterans that you've placed with employment opportunities over the past 10 years, what sorts of industries does that cover?
You know, those industries are range. It could be banking, like finance. It could be IT, tech field. I mean, that's real big right now. Almost every single job fair we're at, you know, there's always some tech industries that's out there trying to get new IT individuals placed. And some words of encouragement for veterans listening, like we tell all everybody at the job fair, make sure you engage with every single employer that's at these events, because, you know, don't look at an employer and say, oh, you know, I know who they are. They don't have what I want. You know, you don't know until you actually go and engage with them, because simply put, every company out there needs IT. They need communications. They need public relations, HR. So bring your soft skills to their organization and let's get you that next meaningful employment opportunity.
Yeah, absolutely. So where can people go for more information, whether they're a veteran looking for work or an employer looking for veteran talent?
All they need to remember is visiting jobs.dav.org. They can access the full range of our resources that we have, to include reaching out to a member, myself or a member of our team here, and we can walk you through anything that you might need and answer any questions they might have.
Awesome. So once again, that website is jobs.dav.org. DAV stands for Disabled American Veterans, jobs.dav.org. You can access the resources that are there or reach out if you want more help or guidance from someone like Ryan. And we've been speaking today with Ryan Burgos. He's a U.S. Air Force and Army veteran of the Iraq War and also the Director of National Employment for Disabled American Veterans, or DAV. And Ryan, I really appreciate you being here and highlighting the skills that veterans can bring to the workplace, which are extremely valuable skills for employers. As you mentioned, it's what they look for anyway. And the fact that we have a ready and willing workforce with great skills, you know, it's really great that you're bringing this to our attention today. So thank you so much for being here.
Oh, of course. Thank you for having me and helping us raise awareness of this.
Hi, I'm Bob Maxwell, CEO of Voice of the Veteran. In the last year, we have helped secure nearly $4 million in aid and lifetime benefits for veterans. If you're a veteran, call us today at 702-381-2566.
I'm Heather Vale, and this is the Odyssey Las Vegas Public Affairs Show. Joining me is Dr. Stephen Reed, president of the American Optometric Association. As the kids are getting ready to go back to school, parents can help prepare by including an eye exam on their back-to-school checklist. Dr. Reed, thank you so much for being here today.
It's my pleasure. Thank you.
So what is the American Optometric Association?
The American Optometric Association represents around 50,000 doctors of optometrists across this country. And our main mission is to make sure we support doctors and the patients that we serve.
Why should an eye exam be included on parents' back-to-school checklist?
Well, I'd say it shouldn't only be included. It should be highlighted and circled three times, because it's really that important. And there are two primary reasons for this. One is development and the other is learning. When a child is born, their vision is not supposed to be 20/20. But as they grow and develop and as their body matures, their vision also matures with that. If there happens to be a problem in a child's vision, whether it be a condition like, say, we call it a refractive condition, like nearsightedness or farsightedness, or perhaps there's an eye disease that's impacting that, well, that can affect that child's visual development. And then a little later on, when that elasticity or that molding process is complete, that vision issue can be locked in. And the second part of that is the learning. And that is critical, of course, for school-aged children. It's estimated that about 80% of what a child learns is through vision. And so if you have a visual disorder, then that child may not know to complain because they really don't know what normal vision is supposed to be, but it can impact their learning and in more ways than just not getting the material. For instance, we see that some children who are farsighted, well, they see fine when they're on the playground, but they start reading and their eyes hurt or they get headaches and they just don't want to read. So they have an aversion to learning. And oftentimes that can result in, you know, labels such as slow learners or perhaps, you know, some kind of behavioral disorder. So all the way around from development to learning is critical to catch any early visual problems from the beginning.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, how has the rise of screen time impacted eye health?
That's a great question, and it's impacted it quite a bit. So whenever you're looking at something up close, your eye muscles have to focus in, kind of like you're focusing a camera. And the closer something is, or the smaller it is, the more the muscles have to tighten up. Well, I like to give you an analogy. If you take a light weight and hold it over your head for a minute, it's not a big deal. But you hold that over your head for an hour, and your arm is going to hurt. And if you do this to your eye muscles and you're continually focused in on something up close, the eye muscles can get to where they do hurt, but more importantly, they can get to where they're not very flexible. Because when you look up across the room, say 20 feet or further away, those muscles are supposed to relax. So they can essentially kind of get locked into the spasm up close. Well, your brain says, wait a minute, hey, let's fix this problem. Let's just make you nearsighted so that you can see your screen, but now you can't see far off and you're, you know, having to wear glasses or contacts, you know, for the rest of your life. So that has resulted this increase in nearsightedness and a doubling of the incidence of nearsightedness in this decade versus the last. So it affects it quite a bit there.
Yeah. So what are some healthy screen time habits that we could teach our kids to make sure it has less impact?
Yeah. One of the things we call the 20-20-20 rule is very impactful. And what that means is about every 20 minutes of looking at a screen or looking pretty much at anything up close, any kind of focused activity, after 20 minutes, look up at something that's at least 20 feet away. I mentioned before that within 20 feet, the eye muscles have to tighten up. But if you're looking 20 feet or further away, the eye muscles can be totally relaxed. And you want to do that for 20 seconds or longer. And so by doing that, we're able to maintain some flexibility. And that's not only good for kids, it's good for adults as well in our jobs every day.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Now, what is the difference between a vision screening and a comprehensive eye exam?
There's a huge difference, actually. What's done in a vision screening is only about 5% of the testing that's done in a comprehensive examination. And so because of this, we're going to miss some problems. And what I don't like about that aspect of it is the child is sent home with a report that says they passed their vision screening. That gives a false sense of security. And so the parent may say, well, they don't need their eyes checked because they passed their screening. But yet they have a problem that's not getting addressed. And so since a comprehensive examination is so much more thorough, and when we do one, we're going to find the problem and have an avenue to at least work on it or fix it, then we just recommend up front that instead of doing the screening, let's just go ahead and get a comprehensive examination by a doctor of optometry.
Okay. So where can listeners go for more information?
The best resource is the American Optometric Association website, and that is aoa.org. And so if you're looking for a doctor near you, you can type in your zip code and a list of nearby doctors of optometry will populate. And of course, you can pick one to take your child to. And there's also a lot of other helpful tips on our website, best practices and so forth.
Nice. Okay. So once again, that website is aoa.org. It stands for American Optometric Association, aoa.org. You can find an optometrist near you, or you can find out more information and tips for healthy eye care. Plenty of information there on the American Optometric Association website, aoa.org. And we've been speaking today with Dr. Stephen Reed. He's the president of the American Optometric Association. And Dr. Reed, I really appreciate you being here, letting us know how important it is to get comprehensive eye exams for the kids before they head back to school, as well as supplying the great tips that you have today. So thank you so much for your time.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Miles. You're not reaching your full potential.
Are you okay, son?
This is Kevin Love. I've partnered with The Spider Within, a Spider-Verse story to let you know that everyone's going through something, even superheroes.
Hey, Dad, you got a minute?
Visit kevinlovefund.org to learn more.
You're listening to the Odyssey Las Vegas Public Affairs Show. I'm Heather Vail, and I'm speaking with Hillary Doe, Chief Growth Officer for the state of Michigan. The Michigan Economic Development Corporation conducted a national survey that shows Americans are ready to commit to a green economy, which they see as an advantage for communities, the environment, businesses, and employees. Hillary, thank you so much for being here today.
Oh, thanks so much for having me.
So what are some of the key findings in your recent survey on the green economy?
Yeah, so we did a nationwide survey of 1,000 U.S. adults. And what we found is that people want investment in things like sustainable technology, clean energy, and electric vehicle infrastructure. And overwhelmingly, 71% of folks believe that even major investments in that sustainable technology over time will pay off. Folks also indicated that they really want the training and pathways necessary to ensure that those technologies are developed and made right in their communities so that, you know, all Americans can really benefit from these sustainable technologies. And we also saw in the survey that there's an expectation these technologies will be designed and manufactured right here in the U.S.
Why do you think there's this renewed interest in a green economy?
You know, I think that part of what we're seeing in the last, you know, even week or so with the devastation from some of the storms we've been seeing and the extreme weather events only underscores how critical it is that we have all hands on deck in the fight against the climate crisis. And I think you can see that in the results here. Again, overwhelming majorities of folks in the survey are really interested in continued and additional investment in these areas. And we're also seeing that folks, again, want them to be manufactured right here in the U.S. and want to participate in these industries. 87% of folks in the survey actually indicated that they'd be willing to pay even more for these technologies if they were made right here. So I think we're seeing, you know, an interest, a recognition that these are going to be critical industries, and an interest in ensuring that, you know, we're at the head of, you know, the global competition for this industry growth.
Okay, so you've mentioned a few times that respondents felt it was very important for these technologies to be manufactured in the U.S. Why is that so important?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, we are, again, now are acknowledging, and folks seem to be recognizing in the survey, that these are going to be fast-growing industries and they're going to be really critical. So in this kind of, you know, globally competitive environment and a really, you know, changing economy, folks are recognizing it'll be important for the U.S. for our continued economic leadership. But I'd also underscore that there's a lot of economic innovation happening in these areas. So there'll be, I think, a lot of economic opportunity for Americans if we're able to ensure that the workforce is trained sufficiently to both design and invent and also help manufacture and make some of these solutions. So, you know, I think that we've seen with the CHIPS Act and with IRA expansion, you know, additional growth in these industries. Michigan, for example, has been number one in clean energy investments. And so we've seen lots of growth in, you know, semiconductors and electric vehicles. And we want, I think Americans are sort of showing up and saying, hey, we want to ensure that those economic opportunities are available for Americans across our country.
So if this industry were to grow in the U.S., obviously, as you mentioned, it's important that we have trained workers on this sustainable technology. What would have to happen in order to have that new workforce that's ready to run this new industry?
Yeah. So, you know, I think we all really have to play a role in this. You know, in Michigan, we are, again, trying to show up and lead in this area. We passed the My Healthy Climate Plan, which really set a pretty aggressive and ambitious sustainability goal. And so as part of that, we've also established talent workforce training programs that have received some national recognition. Folks can check those out at michiganbusiness.org. So all to say, the government, I think, has a role to play here. But also in our survey, respondents really indicated that they want businesses to play a role in this too, and want businesses to offer training in these areas. In fact, 88% of folks, so again, huge numbers in this survey, indicated that they think businesses need to be offering trainings in order to have a workforce that's sufficient to power these growing industries and sustainable technologies, and in order for us to be successful at, you know, growing these industries here in the U.S.
Okay. And how are Americans feeling about other changes in the workplace that might happen with a green economy and more sustainable technology?
Yeah, you know, we in the survey also kind of covered a bit more about the incentive environment and what will be required there. And I thought that those responses were interesting as well in the survey. You see a little bit of, again, overwhelming majority saying that they're even open to businesses receiving incentives in order to ensure that they're adopting these technologies at the pace, I think, that folks are recognizing we need in order to, you know, really meet the moment and meet the challenge that's, you know, in front of us. And so that was sort of an interesting conclusion. We also saw in the survey a little bit of a generational gap, which I thought was sort of interesting to observe. Even though across the survey and across generations, a majority of folks were supportive of additional investments in clean energy and electric vehicle infrastructure, you did see a bit of a gap between, for example, Gen Z and millennials who are more supportive than maybe boomers of certain things, like, for example, electric vehicle investment. And I think that might reflect, you know, an education gap. And so one of the things I think that sort of the survey exposes is the continued importance of public education to make sure all Americans are able to be involved in and take advantage of the economic opportunity that will come out of the growing technologies.
Yeah, absolutely. So where can listeners go if they would like to learn more about green energy and sustainable technology?
Yeah, so they can visit us at michiganbusiness.org to learn a little bit about those programs. We're eager to share everything we've been working on with folks across the country. And you can also Google the My Healthy Climate Plan. That's My MI Healthy Climate Plan to see a little bit more about some of the sort of ambitious goals that we've been setting and the programs that we've put in place. And hopefully, you know, that can help other folks follow the lead.
Nice. Okay. So My Healthy Climate Plan, you can Google. That's My MI Like Michigan, My Healthy Climate Plan. You can also find out more at michiganbusiness.org, michiganbusiness.org. That's the website for the Michigan Economic Development Corporation. And some fantastic news from your survey, Hillary. Looks like we're looking towards a cleaner, greener future and that Americans are on board with it. So I really appreciate you sharing today. Of course, we've been speaking today with Hillary Doe. She's the Chief Growth Officer for the state of Michigan. And Hillary, I want to thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you.
We see the urgent threat of climate change every day, but we often miss those hit hardest by it, women and girls. That's why CARE fights for a more just and sustainable world. You can help. Learn more at care.org/climate.
You're listening to the Odyssey Las Vegas Public Affairs Show. I'm Heather Vail, and I'm speaking with Andrew Mays, president of the National Association of Insurance Commissioners. A new survey from the organization examines young adults' knowledge and relationship with insurance. Andrew, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you for having me on, Heather.
So first of all, what is the National Association of Insurance Commissioners?
It's a whole bunch of chief insurance regulators. Insurance in the United States is regulated at the state level. Unlike banking or securities, there's no federal regulation. It's all state regulation. So we have 56 members, the 50 chief insurance regulators from each state, plus the chief regulators from the District of Columbia and the five territories, Puerto Rico, Virgin Islands, etc. So we are the group that get together to try to make sure there is a national system of state-based regulation and to ensure that our charge, which is to protect consumers, is carried out throughout the nation.
All right. So what are the key findings from your survey on how Gen Z adults feel about insurance?
All right, Gen Z adults are young. That's not a surprise. They're 18 to 27. They're just getting started. And I'm a little older than that, but I can still remember way back when getting started, what it was like starting off. You know, you get out of college or you get out of high school, you got to start off your financial life. What do? You're faced with all of these choices. And that's what we see reflected from the survey. Probably the single biggest item to me was that more than half of the respondents said they felt overwhelmed or anxious at the thought of dealing with insurance, which is not good because we want them to be confident. A third of them said they were going to try to wait as long as possible to get their own life insurance, which doesn't really make sense because you want to get life insurance when you're as healthy as possible and as young as possible. It will be as cheap as possible. And, you know, one in four said the same thing for health insurance. And you need health insurance. You never know what will happen at any given time. So it's, to me, what we found was that the Gen Zers are a little scared and they need education, and that's why we're here.
Okay. Now, to be fair, insurance seems like something that doesn't provide value until you need it. So they might still be feeling young and invincible.
And you're absolutely correct. And in this industry, I've been on both sides. I've been on industry side. I've been a regulator for a long time in two different states. And young invincibles is exactly how we referred to the young people who chose not to get health insurance. You know, it's something that it's there for you when you need it. You don't need it. If you're lucky, you go through life never needing your insurance. But when you do need it, you have to have it. And that's what we have to try to convey to our young people. We want to make sure that nothing happens at the start of their lives that will derail the rest of their lives.
Yeah. Now, with inflation driving up costs, obviously the price of insurance has gone up as well. So how can consumers ensure they're getting adequate coverage at a reasonable rate?
I'm going to split that into two. How can consumers ensure they're getting adequate coverage and that they're getting it at a reasonable rate? The first thing is to make sure that there are no gaps. Make sure that you're getting the coverage you need. And that's going to vary depending on who you are, depending on what you do, depending on the perils you have to face. And the easiest way to get started is to go to our website, NAIC.org, and you're going to find a consumer tab there, which will tell you an awful lot. Yeah, it's interesting that only 1 in 4 of the Gen Z adults could correctly identify the terms deductible or copay. Only 1 in 5 could define out-of-network. All of this is on the website, so it prepares you. And then from there, you can get a link to your state insurance department where you've got a staff sitting there waiting to help you through the process, telling you what you should have going through your coverage. And then after that, it's shopping. Just like everything else, shop around.
Now, when you're talking about no gaps, what does that mean exactly when we're shopping for insurance?
You have to make sure that the coverage that you have is what you thought you should have. And yeah, it's just to give you one example that pretty much so many people have faced. You know, you look at flood insurance. You've got a home. You've got homeowners insurance, but that doesn't cover flood. So if you have a flood, you're not covered. These are the kinds of things that you need to know. These are the kinds of things that you need to understand. You know, what are you facing? Is there an earthquake concern, for instance? Should you have special earthquake coverage? That's what both your state insurance department and your agent or broker should be able to help you with. You know, finding the gaps that are there in your coverage, making sure that everything that you need covered is covered. You know, I'll throw in one more thing. Only 21% of Gen Zers have renter's insurance. What happens if stuff gets stolen from your condo? It's gone. Why? Renter's insurance is cheap. Get it. I mean, these are the gaps. This is what we need to fill. We want to make sure that our consumers, and especially in this case, our young people, know that they're protected.
Yeah, absolutely. And you mentioned health insurance as well. Now, when it comes to auto insurance, a lot of people go for the minimum. What do you recommend when we're choosing auto insurance?
Yeah, again, that's a discussion that you really should have both with your state insurance department and with your agent and broker. States have different minimums, and that varies state by state, and that reflects what you legally have to have in order to drive. However, let's just say you have other assets that you need to protect. What if something happens? You don't want them coming after your house or something else. You want to make sure that you have coverage that reflects your needs. And that's where getting informed can help.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so you mentioned the website, but let's give it one more time. Where can listeners go if they want to get more information or learn more about being properly insured?
Happy to do that. The National Association of Insurance Commissioners, so that's NAIC.org. There's a consumer tab on there. It provides a whole bunch of information on insurance for consumers, identifies terms and so forth, and it provides the links to the individual insurance department in your state that you can call to or send an email to where somebody will be happy to help.
Awesome. Okay, so once again, that website, NAIC.org. That stands for National Association of Insurance Commissioners, NAIC.org. Click on the consumer tab. You've got plenty of information there if you want to learn more about insurance and links to your state department so you can discuss what's relevant in Nevada. NAIC.org. And we've been speaking today with Andrew Mays. He's the president of the National Association of Insurance Commissioners. And Andrew, I want to thank you so much for being here and letting us know, first of all, the state of insurance among young people today, and also some very important information that all consumers should know about regardless of their age. So thank you so much for your time.
Thank you for having me.
Every 36 seconds, a vehicle is stolen in the United States. You have the power to protect your car, remove your valuables, roll up your windows completely, and always lock your doors and take your keys or fob. If you know something about a vehicle theft, call us at 1-800-TEL-NICB.
I'm Heather Vail with the Odyssey Las Vegas Public Affairs Show, and this is your community events calendar for nonprofit initiatives and charity events around the Valley. Monday's Dark with Mark Chinook is a bi-monthly musical fundraising party at The Space, with each event raising $10,000 for a specific charity in 90 minutes. Upcoming shows include Monday, August 5th at 8 p.m. benefiting the Foster Friday Foundation, and Monday, August 19th at 8 p.m. benefiting the Adelson Clinic. Get tickets or find out more details at mondaysdark.com. That's mondaysdark.com. The Las Vegas Rescue Mission is holding their annual bottled water drive through August 31st. During the heat of summer, water is crucial for those experiencing homelessness. You can drop off bottled water donations at the Las Vegas Rescue Mission security gate 24/7. Or you can find out more at vegasrescue.org. That's vegasrescue.org. And the Just One Project is hosting the 4th annual Big Cup Golf Tournament on Thursday, October 17th at the Revere Golf Club. Join the organization and their sponsors on the green to raise funds for the Just One Project programs with friendly competition, food, and drinks. Find out more or sign up to play at thejustoneproject.org. That's thejustoneproject.org.